On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. State Democrats have long pushed for expanded background checks and other gun safety measures. Governor Evers proposed in his state budget to require universal background checks for firearm purchases. Last August, after the police shooting of Jacob Blake, Evers called for a special session.
This is not the time for politics. I'm urging Republican leadership to rise to this important moment in history, to put people before politics and to put lives of Black Wisconsinites above politics.
No debate, no action. How do you want to see state government address mass shootings and gun violence? Where do you see compromise on gun regulation? Share your thoughts. Email ideas at WPR.org. State Senator Melissa Agard is serving her first term in this body, representing a district that includes parts of Madison, Sun Prairie, McFarland, and Fitchburg. She previously served four terms in the Assembly. Senator Agard, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. You've been a longtime champion of stricter gun safety laws, regularly introducing legislation. What has changed, do you think, with this issue since you were first elected to the Assembly in 2012?
Well, it's clear to me that the people of Wisconsin don't want us to be treating gun violence and mass shootings as the inevitable. And people are beyond frustrated with the continued condolences and, standard accolades that people give after these mass shootings. And I'm hearing more and more from folks that the inaction of our government is actually an admission that this is the continued fate of our nation. And people, quite frankly, believe that we are better than that. And I believe we are as well.
You know, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said last month after the Boulder King Supers mass shooting that very little can be done to stop these events. And he had no idea whether more background checks for gun purchases would make people safer. Do you see any Republican support for new gun safety legislation?
Well, we know that there is support from Republicans across the state of Wisconsin on gun safety legislation, unfortunately not amongst my colleagues in the Capitol building. We know that people all across the state of Wisconsin, regardless of party affiliation, support background checks and support the implementation of extreme risk protective orders and support the reinstating of a waiting period after purchasing guns, because they know that in Wisconsin, and in fact in the United States, that this is a unique problem, that this is not the case around the rest of the world, and that in fact common sense gun safety legislation does save lives.
Well, let's look more closely at the extreme risk category. These are commonly known as red flag laws. Governor Evers' state budget proposal includes a couple measures similar to proposals you had introduced as a lawmaker in the previous session. And one of those would create an extreme risk category that would allow courts to prohibit some people from possessing guns. Can you explain more about this proposal, what it looks like?
Yes. An extreme risk protective order is a common sense piece of legislation that would temporarily remove firearms from someone who is at risk of harming themselves or others. And we know that it not only saves the lives of people in the community, but in Wisconsin, a big number of firearm deaths are actually death by suicide with firearms. And extreme risk protective orders also save lives in that case.
How do you see them as the next step, these extreme risk protective orders?
Well, we know that we all deserve to live and recreate and spend time in a safe community. And when there are people who are out there that are at the risk of harming themselves or other people, they should not have access to firearms. So whether it is that we're talking about the extreme risk protective orders or making sure that people have adequate background checks or that there is a waiting period there, we are not taking firearms away from law-abiding citizens. We're not, you know, one of the things that I hear an awful lot about from people in Wisconsin is they're worried about their Second Amendment rights. Mm. Well, if you are a healthy person who follows the law, you are going to be able to continue to have your guns. Your guns are not going to be taken away. And, you know, I know that this is a big part of our culture here in Wisconsin. And in fact, my family owns guns. We don't, you know, it's a false narrative that by implementing common sense gun safety legislation that we're removing guns from people's law-abiding people's hands. Actually, I believe very much that we are protecting law-abiding folks' Second Amendment rights.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Melissa Agard, who's a state senator who represents a district in the Madison area. We're looking more closely at legislation aimed at reducing gun violence. Do you own a handgun? Tell us why and why it makes you feel safer. What do you make of legislation that would put more controls on gun safety? You can join us with your thoughts. Email ideas at WPR.org. State Senator Agard, the governor also wants to require gun sales to be handled by federally licensed dealers and require background checks. You've introduced similar proposals. How are gun sales regulated now?
Well, currently there are loopholes in our laws that allow people to transfer gun ownership or for people to go to gun shows that do not have background checks and to be able to purchase firearms. And this piece of legislation would close that loophole. It would close that gun show loophole. And we know that by doing this, we would actually be able to prevent folks like domestic abusers and felons from being able to purchase weapons using these loopholes. Background checks have stopped over nearly 2.5 million gun sales to prohibited people, including felons and domestic abusers in our nation. And we know that in Wisconsin, we need to take those actions and close these gun show loopholes and make sure that everyone that purchases a firearm has an adequate background check.
Is there good data on the gun show loophole, though? Is it clear how many sellers are licensed and how many are not? Do we have a sense on how problematic this gun show loophole is?
Well, I believe that we do. I believe that that in states, and you know, I'm a firm believer in the science, and that when we look at the statistics of gun states that have closed the gun show loophole, that do have adequate background checks, that they have actually been able to stop the purchase of guns to people who would be prohibited by them. And here in Wisconsin, we absolutely need to be doing that. We do know that in states where they do have common sense gun safety legislation, that gun violence has actually dropped. We know that everyone in our state deserves the right to be safe and secure wherever they are, and that no one deserves to be victimized or killed or harmed by guns.
We have Democratic State Senator Melissa Agard on the State Capitol Report. Should there be stricter gun laws, or do you believe that they would violate the Second Amendment? Are you in favor of universal background checks? Should parents be required to keep their guns locked away? How are you informed about the gun debate? Join us with your thoughts. Email ideas at WPR.org. That's ideas at WPR.org. There's more State Cap in a moment with Senator Agard here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing gun violence and what the policy debate looks like right now in Wisconsin. On Thursday, President Biden announced a number of executive actions intended to curb what he called an epidemic of gun deaths. Speaking in the Rose Garden,
Nothing I'm about to recommend in any way impinges on the Second Amendment. They're phony arguments suggesting that these are Second Amendment rights at stake from what we're talking about.
What is your reaction to recent mass shootings? Atlanta, Boulder, Oconomowoc. What about the Miller Coolers shooting in February last year? What is the legislative path forward? We're reaching you on email this morning, emailideas@WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. State Senator Melissa Agard of Madison stays with us for 10 more minutes. So last week, President Biden announces a handful of executive actions on gun safety, and that included a crackdown on so-called ghost guns, which are firearms assembled from kits. Some proponents of gun control say these measures don't do enough. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I do know that by taking any step, we are moving forward in this conversation, and that we have experienced too many senseless deaths and too much grief in our nation. And I do know that there is science and data out there that shows that with these common sense actions that we can reduce gun violence. We can slow the sale of illegal guns, and we can create a safer Wisconsin. All, I agree very much with what our president said, by protecting the rights and liberties of responsible gun owners. This is not an either-or conversation. This is a conversation that we need to be having so that our communities are safer and our kids don't have to grow up with the fear of gun violence.
I want to explore a little bit with you. You've proposed the People's Voice Act, which would give people more of a say in which bills the legislature would take up. Can you tell us what this act would do?
Absolutely. So in the state of Wisconsin, not every bill that is introduced has the opportunity to move forward in order to have a public hearing in the state of Wisconsin. So very much like our fourth graders are taught, or that many of us learned on Schoolhouse Rock while we were growing up, how a bill becomes a law. Oftentimes that bill is introduced and it just sits there and withers and no one has the opportunity to officially talk about it. So the People's Voice Act would actually create a path where rather than leaning on the majority party to schedule those bills, because that's where we are now, the people of the state of Wisconsin can petition the government to have a public hearing on that, on these pieces of legislation. And, you know, right now in Wisconsin, less than half of the bills that are introduced actually are given a public hearing. So my goal through the People's Voice Act would be to allow citizens to be able to push the government, gently nudge the government to allow for a public hearing. It doesn't mean there needs to be a vote. It doesn't need to go before the full legislature, but a committee public hearing on a policy.
Can you give an example or two of policies that deserve this nudge, so to speak, from a People's Voice Act?
Absolutely. So I'm sure, as you're aware, I am the lead author on a piece of legislation that would tax and regulate and legalize alcohol in the same way, or marijuana is the same way that we tax and regulate alcohol in the state of Wisconsin. We know that this is a very supported policy by people across the state, but the Republican majority has never allowed, even after four sessions of introducing this bill, a public hearing. So what would happen is the elections board would be, people would be able to pursue a petition with the elections commission in the state of Wisconsin. And once a petition was filled out and activated, people would be given a period of time where they could sign on to a petition. And it would mean that we would need roughly 3% of the previous number of voters in the last gubernatorial election. So that's in our last elections, about 80,000 signatures, or about the size of Camp Randall, filled with fans, would have to sign on in support of that petition. And if that's the case, then a public hearing would be triggered.
You know, people sign petitions all the time for lots of different things. Do you find that this would give petitions more legs, if you will, more teeth?
Well, in the case of this petition, the petition for a public hearing, the public hearing would have to occur,
okay,
because of the bill that is passed. We all sign on to petitions, and we all, you know, oftentimes sign on to sign on letters and make statements. But this would actually create a trigger that a hearing would have to, an official hearing would have to be messaged, and it would have to occur in one of the bodies of the legislature.
We're talking with Melissa Agard, first-term state senator from Madison, previously served four terms in the Assembly. We're discussing legislation, specifically gun safety legislation, other measures that she wants to get traction on, and taking your thoughts on gun safety and what you see in the People's Voice Act. Do you sign petitions often? What do you want them to do? Do you think the People's Voice Act would help make the legislature more productive? Join in this morning by email. Email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. State Senator, you're also co-sponsoring a number of bills with State Senator Andre Jacques, a Republican from DePere. How have you been able to find common ground with this particular lawmaker?
Well, I am proud of my track record in the legislature. In being able to not only be bold and stand by the values and the policies that are so important to the people in the district I represent, but also in forging authentic relationships with my colleagues. Ultimately, being a member of the legislature is being a member of a team of people who are elected to put Wisconsin first. And I am glad that I have colleagues on the other side of the aisle who are willing to work with me as a member of the minority party. And, you know, there's a Senator Jacques and Senator Coles and Senator Darling are examples of folks who I have been able to find agreement on different policies. And while we might not agree on everything, we do agree that it is our job to be public servants to the people of the state and to work on what it is that we can together.
One of the bills with Senator Jacques would exempt sales tax for diapers, for period products. How would this particular proposal work? And how did this come about in working with Senator Jacques on this piece of legislation?
Well, I know very much that absorbency products in Wisconsin are not luxury items. Based on our tax law, we charge taxes on items that are considered a luxury. So diapers, adult absorbency products, and menstrual products, I have never heard someone say that having access to them is a luxury. So I very much believe that this is a policy that will be good for everyone in the state of Wisconsin. And it is really refreshing to be able to work with Senator Jacques in order to be able to move these policies forward. And this is another example of something that is included in the governor's budget that, you know, we hope gets through there. But if it doesn't, I am glad that I'm able to work with Senator Jacques and be able to move forward a policy that would remove the sales tax off of diapers, adult absorbency products, and menstrual products in the state of Wisconsin.
Do you know the impact that this legislation would have on sales tax?
Well, I do know what the impact would be on the ordinary, fabulous people of the state of Wisconsin, and that would be life-saving. Mm. We're not, you know, typically asking how much it is that we're going to save. When it, you know, we gave billions of dollars away to the Foxconn Corporation, for example. I mean, it's looking like a lot of that is falling apart, but that was a policy that moved forward without a lot of concern about the costs to the state of Wisconsin. Yes, there is a fiscal impact here. And it, you know, on a first blush, it seems like an awful lot of money, but you think about the impact on babies and people who menstruate and folks that wear adult absorbency products, and it is life changing. It's the right thing to do. And ultimately, that's the purpose of government, is to support the people of our community.
Another bill would create a database for tracking sexual assault test kits. How would this improve the state's response to sexual assault cases?
So I am proud to work on legislation that would address sexual assault and stand with victims and survivors in the state of Wisconsin. There are two bills that are moving forward through the legislature right now, one authored by myself and Senator Darling, and another authored by myself and Senator Coles. And we know that ultimately it is vitally important that we track sex kits, and we stand with survivors so that we get the people that are perpetuating these crimes off of the streets, and we allow people closure and be able to move forward and live stronger, healthier lives.
As we wrap up in our last seconds, circling back to gun violence, what gives you hope that lawmakers can make some progress on this issue?
What gives me hope is that the people of our state very much are asking for this to happen, again, regardless of their their political affiliation. The people of Wisconsin very much believe that we can't continue to treat gun violence, death by suicide with guns, and mass shootings as the inevitable of our way of life, and that there are too many people that have experienced the grief and the pain of gun violence, and that together I know that we can move forward and make sure that Wisconsin is a safer and healthier place for everyone.
State Senator Agard, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Melissa Agard is a Democrat from Madison, serving her first term in the state Senate. She previously served four terms in the Assembly. Coming up, the state Capitol report continues with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger from Green Bay. Do you live in Green Bay or Marinette? Let's talk. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Glad you could be here. Now we're getting acquainted with the policy priorities of first-term Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. His constituents span Green Bay to Marinette. Wimberger is a lawyer and Marine veteran. Do you live in the district he represents? What questions do you have for him, especially amid the pandemic? Email ideas at WPR.org. That's email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. State Senator Wimberger, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, lay out some groundwork for us. What are your top priorities this legislative session?
Well, I'm pretty practical about what I want to accomplish. There's a bridge in the southern end of De Pere. It's called the Southern Bridge. That's going to be critical to economic development in the area. There's some coal piles downtown in Green Bay that blow a bunch of ash or dust all over the neighborhood, and moving that to a different location would help spur some economic development downtown. I think that would be good and increase property values. And then we obviously have some issues with water quality and PFAS up in Marinette that I think are long term, and hope to at least make some take a chunk out of that one.
Okay, so some local issues for sure, but let's look at coal piles first. These coal piles, you know, for years you've been trying to move them from the waterfront. What is their status, and what are the roadblocks?
Downtown, you know, this is just a part of the industrial age and how a city develops. And I don't cast any dispersion. It's just how people lived, and so there are these coal piles right south of the Mason Street Bridge, and it blows dust across the river. Obviously, there's some that goes in the river, but there's some plans there to actually move them to the mouth of the bay on a location that was formerly owned by the Public Service. And so the people who own that location with the coal piles have agreed to just kind of move operations over there. There's been some preliminary steps so far to purchase the location more towards the mouth of the river, and it's kind of gotten a big giant step forward there. But the property swap that would be envisioned is only going to happen if there's some development on that property to make it kind of an equivalent exchange. But I think there's some progress being made, and hopefully there can be some environmental studies and development done there with help with funding from the state.
Yeah. What do you see as your role as a lawmaker to get these coal piles moved? We're also seeing funding from the federal government via the pandemic. What is your role?
Well, it seems like the county and the city have gotten some money that could be used for that. And I actually I hope they do prioritize things like the coal piles. It's an intergenerational issue, and to take care of it now is going to be such a great long-term boon to Green Bay. To ignore it at this point, it's going to take another long period of time before a scenario develops where we're healthy in our budget. We have some extra federal monies that could be used for it. So I think it's time to kind of pounce on things like this and do something that cleans up the area and also makes the place more attractive to development.
Let's look at PFAS. Now, you support a bill that would provide $1 million to fund collecting, storing, and disposing of firefighting foam that's linked to these forever chemicals. How would this effort work?
It's to help out the fire departments, and that's only a very small portion of this PFAS problem, obviously. But, PFAS foam has saved thousands of lives, and you don't want to discredit that or discount that. But it causes a collateral problem, which is obviously the PFAS pollution issue. So we advanced technologically to where those things don't need to be used anymore. But we've got to dispose them properly. And it isn't just any landfill that will take it. You've got to bring it to a particular place. So it helps all the fire departments kind of clear out their tanks and put it in a landfill that can take those things.
So last week, DNR Secretary Preston Cole urged lawmakers to increase funding for PFAS cleanup efforts. And at a budget hearing, Cole said our health and the state's hunting heritage are inextricably linked to clean water and soil.
We have to be prepared for folks making some determination either not to show up here, sell their properties, move, close the store. There's too much at stake. And if we have the capacity to remove these chemicals off the landscape as we have before, please trust us to do it again for this chemical.
So please trust us. Too much at stake. The governor's proposed budget includes millions for community assistance and testing programs. Do you support these provisions of the governor's budget?
Well, in a general sense, I don't have a good bead with the DNR's proposal as to what it's going to accomplish in particular, but in a general sense, yeah, I think a lot of study has to be done about where the chemicals are in relation to the Johnson Controls facility and on the farm fields. So it's some funding is necessary. I don't know the details of whether what the DNR is proposing is the precise number needed. I do know that it's an actual cleanup or addressing the issue is going to be beyond what the governor is asking for.
There was that lawsuit by the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and under an agreement, the DNR can continue sampling water from industrial and municipal treatment plants for PFAS, but it won't release the results to the public. How do you feel about that?
I don't know yet how I feel about that. It's not nice to be secret about it, but if the effluent in various locations is being disposed of properly, then the issue of what it contains doesn't necessarily need to be pressing in the issue here. But the more pressing things are the application of effluent onto farm fields from wastewater treatment plants, and that's the real big one, because it drains off into streams and rivers and obviously contaminates water wells. So it's when it becomes an issue that gets put into a public waterway in one way or the other. So I'm not sure what exactly needs to be made public or not. I'm sure eventually, if anything the DNR does, is going to be made public.
Okay, so you're not quite sure about how the WMC should be able to block or not block the DNR from testing for PFAS. What do you make of the PFAS rulemaking process? Through the DNR, it intends to test for more than 30 PFAS compounds. Should the DNR be able to expand its scope?
Well, the DNR generally has ability to see whatever's going on there, and expand the scope as far as what they test for. I don't think they're really limited on what they test the particular samples for. It's the access into private locations that I think would be the more constitutional issue. But once they take a sample, you know, then when they take that sample to their lab and what they test it for, I don't think they're obstructed from testing whatever they want.
We're talking about politics with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. You can email your comments, your thoughts, and issues that are at the forefront to you. Email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's focus now on the pandemic and schools. Your first bill this year would require school boards to vote every 2 weeks before closing schools to in-person instruction. Closures would need a two-thirds majority vote. Why do you support these measures?
It's important to get kids back into school. There's some falling behind with the schools, and I think a two-week review is a reasonable request that that there be a vote every 2 weeks. Now, you don't have to necessarily send your kid into in-person, but at least a hybrid could be an option there. So I think just the concept of the low degree of risk relative to children versus older people, that there can be some accommodations made.
Green Bay Public Schools in your neck of the woods started reopening last month. Do you agree with how the district is handling the pandemic?
I think they're a little slow on the draw there, but that's just a personal preference. I'm glad that the school board here is moving forward.
What do you mean slow on the draw?
I think the data had shown earlier on that it was reasonably safe for children to come back to school. And there could be accommodations made with some virtual things for people who weren't comfortable sending their children to school. But there were a lot of people, thousands that were interested in having their children come back to school.
You know, school boards, they have elected officials. What do you say to school boards who see your legislation as a form of limiting local control over their day-to-day operations?
Sure. Well, any city is a corporate figment to begin with that's granted by a state statute. So although I definitely prefer to have more local control, there are times when the state, who is the grantor of the authority for the city to even exist, can change things. And that's pretty typical.
We're talking with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. He's with us to discuss his priorities in his first term in the legislature. What issues are on your mind? Lawmakers and the pandemic, what to do about forever chemicals, PFAS, closer to home in Green Bay as we've been talking about the coal piles. Be part of the state cap. Email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Back in a minute with Senator Wimberger here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. He's in his first term in the state Senate, and this is his first time holding elected office. He's an attorney, a Marine veteran, and originally from De Pere. Do you live in Green Bay, Marinette, or another community that Senator Wimberger represents? What questions do you have for him? Email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. And Wimberger is with us for 10 more minutes. Let's look at vaccine rollout. All Wisconsin residents over 16, age 16, are now eligible to receive COVID vaccines. How is the vaccine rollout going in the communities you represent in your district?
Well, I think up north you had to wait a little bit, but until recent, I think on the whole, everything is pretty well oiled and running pretty well. There's even vaccine clinic opened up in the Lambeau Field atrium. So I don't think the delay is all that long, really, a day or two.
So you're pleased overall with what you're seeing in this district as vaccines are made accessible to your residents?
I do. There's clinics and small there's small clinics throughout the northern part of Wisconsin, and you know, it took a while to get that many vaccines into the areas because it's you know, it's a new thing. But nowadays, in the last few weeks here, it's been okay.
You know, public health authorities say the vaccines are safe and it's crucial to reach herd immunity. What do you tell people who feel hesitant?
And there are people actually that come into the Senate hearings that have had adverse effects by vaccines. My position on all that is, if I personally get the vaccine, I'm in control of my own destiny. And if you get the vaccine, you're in control of your own destiny. And if the vaccine works, then it kind of isn't your business to tell other people if they do or do not get the vaccine. So, because how can their behavior affect you if you have the vaccine? You're immune even if the other person gets it. So I like the idea of just live and let live type of an attitude there. I know people are worried about vaccines. There are people who have adverse effects from vaccines. And if you don't feel comfortable, you don't feel comfortable. But it seems on the whole safe. And I'll be getting mine. I wasn't eligible for a while here.
All right. So live and let live. No requirements, though, on getting a COVID vaccine in your mind.
Right. And there's actually a bill through the Senate that I am in favor of that prohibited employers from requiring a vaccine as well. It's just too new of a vaccine. And I understand people's worry.
When you talk with employers, what are they telling you on this?
I don't think employers really have a problem. There's the limited liability that we passed, and people encourage it. Employers encourage it, but if you walk into a store and you realize that people may or may not have the vaccine, and you do, and that makes you worried, well, there has to be an accommodation other than having the government tell people what to do.
What about, say, American Family Field, a giant stadium full of fans? Would you want the assurance that those fans are vaccinated or not?
The whole concept here with the mandates to do one thing or another is actually the imposition on you for something that you may not be able to control. So in the circumstance related to the virus, it was related to system overload and a health system unable to cope with an influx of patients. I think we're probably past that. In fact, I don't know how we're not past that. That if there was an outbreak, I think our health system would be able to handle it. So the fact of you contracting a virus doesn't give you justification to use the government to tell people what to do. We don't do it with the flu. We don't do it with anything, with any type of virus or disease. If there's a vaccine out there and you can control your own behavior by not going to the stadium, for instance, then and you won't get the virus. And then if you just happen to get the virus by some circumstance and medical care is available to you, then I think that overarching government justification to impose restrictions isn't there.
We're talking politics with Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger of Green Bay. You can email your questions for the first term state senator. Email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So continuing on this pandemic thread, mask wearing. The state Supreme Court recently ruled against the governor's repeated use of emergency powers to order a statewide mask mandate. What is your reaction to their decision?
It's the legally correct analysis. The governor has 60 days to do an emergency order like this, and it's the way it has to be, because to declare new emergencies based on some sort of different variation in circumstances would effectively eliminate the legislature. And so it's important that the governor work with the legislature to continue on with any sort of measures, because an emergency is only for a brief period of time where a system might collapse. After there's some assessment, it's not really an emergency. It's actually a long-term problem. And we deal with long-term problems through a deliberative process in the legislature and the executive.
But if pandemics only lasted 60 days, I think we'd all be pretty ecstatic. I mean, do you really think the legislature would extend an emergency order when GOP lawmakers have fought, you know, fought public health pursuits in court at every turn?
Well, that's kind of a separate issue. But yeah, there's a problem with getting people to agree with you. And that's why we have debate. But the 60-day limit is not because a pandemic will only last 60 days. That's ridiculous to think that. It's because after you can stabilize a situation, then it's no longer an emergency. An emergency is something that is very unstable and needs an immediate reaction. And that's what the 60-day period is for. Anything further than that is a long-term problem, and the pandemic is a long-term problem.
So should Republicans approve a statewide mask order, whether that's through legislation or the rulemaking process?
I don't think at this point that it's necessary. There's the businesses are comfortable doing the masks in their businesses, and they can handle that. You can avoid going to stores. You can get your vaccine now. So it's the mask, a mandate from the state, I don't think is necessary.
Let's look at the nonpartisan analysis. Overturning the governor's emergency order could cause the state to lose about $50 million in monthly federal food aid. And state health officials now say that could start happening next month. Should the state take action to maintain this assistance?
If there can be an emergency order crafted that triggers that food aid, I think it should be done. If it's limited in the scope of only doing that, I know that the Senate tried to do that previously, and I think it's something that needs to happen. However, simultaneously, I don't know if the federal government can actually tie food aid to declaration of a emergency, a formal, you know, document of some type. I don't think that there can be a tie to there.
So the legislature wants more control of the federal aid that is coming into Wisconsin due to the pandemic. The legislature has a very poor track record of acting nimbly and finding consensus in the pandemic. If you give the legislature control of funding, would that slow aid to residents who need it fast?
Well, I don't know if you can say it's going to be delivered fast, regardless of who distributes it. I know it took several months for Governor Evers to distribute the last round of it. And just having unilateral control over the purse is typically not something the governor does. Usually the purse is in the control of the legislature, and that's how you do a check and balance. Now, Governor Evers has carte blanche authority over that money. So if things aren't exactly the way he wants them, in a way that solves the problem, then we definitely know who's to blame for it, because there's no input from the legislature.
State Senator Wimberger, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Eric Wimberger is a Republican state senator from Green Bay. He represents residents from Green Bay to Marinette. Voters first elected him to the Senate last year. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.